Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. The Queen tour is finally over.
Oh.
Not the band, the lady.
Yep.
I wish I had a good British accent I could do, because I would read all these stories in a British accent.
Good heavens.
All right, you have to do the rest of the break like this.
Okay.
Rob, do you have a British accent?
Not quite. It's no. it's kind of poor. Yeah, not quite.
Good heavens, that was terrible.
England's Queen Elizabeth was laid to rest
yesterday.
Oh, there
you go. Yeah.
The procession kicked off with the coffin placed on a gun carriage, which was 242 miles off the whatever.
It was towed by 142 members of the Royal Navy through the streets of central London. We saw that. They looked like the saltine box guys?
Yeah, the Mr. Saltine, yeah.
Mr. Saltine.
But how heavy was she if 142 men had to pull her? Good heavens, for God's sake, stop eating those jam sandwiches.
I got to tell you, that casket didn't look light.
No, not
at all.
No, that was no pillbox.
A normal person casket is heavy.
Yeah.
That was...
fortified.
Nuts.
Yeah. Probably had all of her stuff in there, too. like packed everything. All my jewelry, my crown, everything in here.
Oh, man. Can you imagine some of the stuff in there?
I mean, do they bury her with her crown? I mean, it is her crown.
The crown was on top of the casket, though.
Yeah, but I mean, did they like...
She has multiple crowns.
I have no idea. Did she have like her, you know, her everyday
crown? The crown had to be another foot long.
Right.
To fit the crown. Because she has different crowns, right? It's like Pope hats. There's the soup bowl. There's the long...
Right. There's the antenna.
The rocket.
Right, yes. Yes, the Tetris 7.
She had different crowns?
I guess. I don't know.
That one that was on her casket looked like there are a lot of jewels in there.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money.
I wonder how much that thing is worth.
It's, well, when you get over the conversation about it being priceless.
Right. But I mean, if you had to put a value on it,
like in other words, you picked the jewels out of it, sold the jewels, melt down the metal.
Is Queen.
Who knows? Charles might be doing that in 10 years.
Right. Queen's crown worth. Oh, boom. Here we go. La, 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 la.
Oh, boom.
Oh, boom.
Boom.
Oh, yes. It's said to be priceless. Oh, come on, jerks.
Yeah, like I said.
I want worth anywhere from 1.2 to 5.8 billion.
Oh.
Billion.
Billion.
And that was on her. And that was on her head. She was originally taller over the years. She's kind of melting.
All right. So this is when... 142 members of the Royal Navy through the streets of central London from Westminster Hall to Westminster Abbey, where the services took place.
It's emotional, and it's so sad.
Now, the first clip. First clip on your sheet.
I say, give me music.
Yeah, this is music. This is very like dramatic. Is this when they're placing the coffin on the gun cart?
This is when they're going through
the streets.
They're cruising. Yes, right. This is their cruise music. No, that's the church.
That's the bells.
That's the bells. Yes.
That's not it.
And one before that. Yes, the dramatic one, from the top.
This is back.
I thought that's what I had.
This is back a couple hundred years. We take his head off.
It's emotional.
No. We've heard from her already.
Music.
I did them in the order. I don't know. Let's see.
Now, the sheet that AJ gave you, first clip is England's Queen Elizabeth was laid to rest today.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Give me the lame music.
And then there's music. Here, I'm going to play music.
Yeah.
This is...
Here we are, dragging it through the streets, cruising at a speed of 5 miles per hour. Notice how she does the light bulb turn wave.
She's dead. She's not doing a wave.
Involuntarily. Her arm is sticking out.
Thank you.
This is very dramatic.
Yeah.
It's almost like an opera.
Every single everything yesterday had some symbolism to it.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Like, there was not one thing. It's like, yeah, this is, let's ring the bell.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing. Everything was, no, we're not just ringing the bell. We're putting these leather things over its balls.
Right.
Keep Who warm. Knows where those leather things were before?
Or whose balls are on, yes.
But they muffled the clapper for the bell. Go ahead. It's still pretty loud.
Yeah. I'm thinking Taco Bell, you. It's a block here.
I could go for a double beef burrito supreme.
I had mixed emotions watching it. I thought, wow, this is really cool to see something like this.
Yeah.
And then I thought, history. Was one person worth all this trouble? Huh? It seems like a lot.
Right.
A lot Man, of
it's
people.
Not, it's not he's just going to tell anybody.
I don't mean the spectators. I just mean all of the people. You're marching over here. You're wearing this red jacket with this big brown furry hat.
Yep.
You're over Mr. here.
Salty.
You're riding the horse.
Mr. Salties.
You're putting the leather things on the balls of the right. bells.
Not a lot going on.
All right, you're going to play a solo rendition of this song with a bagpipe.
Yep.
This is a lot.
Yep. You know, break out the gun carriage and all that sorts of good
the
stuff.
The flowers on her casket
yeah.
were grown from some, like they took the same flower that she used in her, the plants from the flowers that she used in her wedding.
Oh, wow.
Prince Philip. They somehow, you know, I don't know, not cloned, but like they took a whatever. They kept growing it or whatever.
Wow.
And so it was basically the same flowers from her wedding on her casket.
It's a long plant life.
It's a lot for
yeah, all that.
A person.
Right. Don't just cremate it. That's the end of it.
Can you imagine if we did this for every single person who died?
Seriously. Like, oh. Yeah.
That's enough.
Yep. I'm good.
Justin Welby.
Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yes, former of Canterbury.
Gave the sermon.
Her late majesty famously declared on a 21st birthday broadcast that her whole life would be dedicated to serving the nation and Commonwealth. Rarely has such a promise been so well kept. Few leaders receive the outpouring of love that we have seen.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That was a very good 27 seconds there. Could you just leave it right there?
Okay.
The whole other 3 hours.
Right, just... I,
good. We got it.
He just said, mic drop, boom. Then you took a swig of whiskey and you poured it on the casket. And something for my homie.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is taking some heat for happily singing a Queen song. Not the Queen, but the Queen, the band
right,
song.
Right, that Queen.
With a band in a hotel lobby. So, he's in London to go to the funeral.
Yeah.
He sees a band playing, and then he jumps in and he does Bohemian Rhapsody. They should be mad at him for trying to do that song.
Easy come, easy go, little high, little low.
Yeah, but the... It sounds like a beef eater.
Yes.
Little guy. High, little low. Good heavens. Little high.
So,
Munchkin.
Munchkin.
It's a Munchkin singing.
From Wizard of Oz.
Yep.
So because of this, I mean, everybody went nuts, and then he got booed as he was entering. People waited in line up to 7 miles long to pay their final respects to Queen Elizabeth and walk past her casket. These people were especially moved by the experience.
There were some of them were quiet.
They were stunned silent.
Emotional. And it's so sad. If you just imagine the most serene thing, that is it so far that I've ever seen in my, or experienced in my life. Don't probably as close to heaven that I think heaven. I'm going to get.
I'm telling you, but we all have connection. We all fall in love with her.
We won't see another lady on the throne for us many, many years to come.
I'm so glad that we've done it.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I did.
And every person coming out of there will say exactly the same, just the emotion in the room, the emotion in the queue. I would go again. I would wait as long as it took.
And I just love the Queen. And I can't believe she's gone.
Look at her son. She was 96 years old, for God's sake. It could have happened any moment. I can't believe she's gone. Anytime after 84, pretty much, was like, you know, the chance. You didn't prepare yourself.
Yeah.
Just saying. I mean, I'm sorry she's gone, but damn it, it wasn't a shock.
Mm.
96, she could have sneezed and keeled over.
She was one shower slip away.
Exactly, right. She could have, like, taken the laundry and fell down the stairs like that lady, Mrs. Fletcher.
Let's do the math. She did her 70th Jubilee, and she just sat there.
Right.
Right. And then we hadn't seen her since.
Right. Like,
all right,
immobile. They watered her a couple of times. Yep.
All right.
They put a drink in front of her just in case.
What's this next clip? Oh, some Americans who went.
10 years ago, we were here in London, and I said to the girls, I said, well, when the Queen passes, whenever that day may be, we'll come for the funeral. We just thought it would be a special time, and we're very respectful of the Queen.
I've been fascinated by her probably since I was in second or third grade, so it just seemed kind of the natural thing to want to do.
My dad was here accidentally for Princess Di's funeral, and he said that just the feel of being in town during that event was something that he will always remember, and that if I could make it out here, I shouldn't miss it.
It's like a family trip. Hey, the Queen's dead. Let's go to England.
Let's go.
Right.
All right, everybody.
Come on, kids.
Let's...
Yay! It's the moment we've waited for. She's dead. Pack your things. We're going to England.
And she was pretty cool.
No, she was cool.
Yeah.
But to make a special family trip.
So... Very few people in life that you see have such a life.
Yeah.
Like, in my lifetime, I think the Pope.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King.
Of course.
Yeah, Mother Teresa.
Right, right, right.
The Queen.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pretty much wraps up right there.
Daniel Simone, author of 3 Homicides, No Convictions, on the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Let's start from the beginning. What happened?
Well, Bob Durst was a very wealthy individual by reason of his family business, the Durst Organization, which today stands as one of the largest real estate conglomerates in all of Manhattan. And his family broke away from him because of his eccentricities.
Which is a fancy way of saying crazy.
Yeah, a little nutball.
It is. It's a very fancy way of saying crazy.
It's the
crazy,
rich person's precisely. Word for crazy.
Right.
I mean, he would go around the offices of the family business urinating in waste paper baskets just because he didn't feel like walking to the men's room.
Just trying to save time. Windows don't open.
He's being very efficient.
The windows don't open the 60th floor. You got to do it. Yeah.
No, but it's interesting if you see a homeless person do that, they're gross or crazy.
Yeah.
If you see a rich person do it, they're eccentric.
Yes. Eccentricity. Right. Yes.
Yeah. So he was crazy. No one put him in the hospital.
Right.
Seems weird.
So his family severed themselves from him, and he was compensated enormously, approximately $140 million.
Oh,
hello. Yeah.
That's exactly what you want to do to someone who's peeing in garbage cans.
Yeah,
like, let's give him $140 million and see what happens.
Right. He buys his own garbage cans now.
And, of course, he was a carouser and a hellraiser. He was confrontational. But at some point, he met a woman, Prudence Farrow, sister of Mia Farrow.
Oh.
And they fell in love. They fell deeply, deeply in love while he was married. And Prudence Farrow, incidentally, she was the subject of one of the Beatles' songs titled Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Dear Prudence, yeah.
That she was the subject of that song.
Wow.
And... At some point, Prudence refused to continue the relationship with Durst unless he separated or divorced, more accurately, from his wife.
Okay.
When Durst put forth the divorce proposition to his wife said gladly, but she demanded an exorbitant amount of money.
More than half?
And, I'm sorry?
More than half?
More than half, yes.
Okay.
Mm. And so Durst saw fit, mathematically and conveniently, to kill her instead.
Right, a little cheaper. Okay.
There is that math.
It's going economy so, again.
What's cheaper?
So Kathy Durst, his wife, disappeared. Her body was never found. And she was not declared officially dead until many, many, many years later.
Really? So all these people, like this, because this isn't a guy who could fly under the radar. This is a high-profile, super-rich guy.
Eccentric.
Known to be nutty.
Right.
Probably people know about this affair. All of a sudden, she disappears, and everyone's like, nothing to see here.
No eyebrows raised, no.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems pretty incredible.
The day after she disappeared, the dean of her medical college, which she was attending, she was going to medical school at Durst's expense, the dean of the medical college received a phone call, allegedly from her, Kathy Durst, announcing that she wasn't feeling well and that she would not be attending classes for the rest of that week.
Okay.
So this is when she was last heard of. And that's a vague statement that I make because the dean thought that it was Kathy Durst calling, but he wasn't 100% certain. It was later revealed to my collaborator, Nick Chavin. Nick Chavin, incidentally, was Bob Durst's closest friend, and they cavorted together. Susan Berman was the second victim of Bob Durst. And
I'm starting to lose this tree now.
Yeah, so we got one is missing, medical student, yada yada.
Yeah, but I'm surprised that a college professor would have a super famous person in their class and not recognize their voice.
Well, Kathy
just think, like, how many famous people did you have in your class?
Right,
like you didn't know what she sounded like.
But Kathy Durst was not a famous person at that point.
Well, she was married to someone famous?
But she wasn't really publicly known.
Okay.
She really wasn't.
Right.
But in any event,
all right.
Later, my collaborator...
She disappears. Just gone.
She disappears.
No police report. It's just like, she took off.
Bob Durst, at the insistence of his wife's family... A week later, did file a police report.
Okay.
But the police did not really act vigorously into the disappearance because it was believed that she might have absconded with a drug dealer, a lover that allegedly she was having a relationship with. And was never confirmed either.
Okay.
That's fine. You know, the one thing with crazy people is they're usually genius as well.
Yeah.
Happened to have been a very, very intelligent individual. So the notion that his wife absconded with a drug dealer was basically the answer to her disappearance at that point in time.
And everybody just, the media, nobody picks up on this. No one thinks, no one hires a private investigator, nothing. Right. Just goes away.
Well, what Durst did, he took out a front page ad at a cost of about $80,000 with the New York Post, offering a $100,000 reward for any information leading to his wife.
This guy's good.
Right.
Which everyone thought that was magnanimous of him to have done that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
How about a good guy?
But later...
I didn't even know you could buy the front page of any newspaper.
Wow, that kind of
I know you could buy a strip on the top, but like to buy the front page.
He probably had it.
That's generally where the news goes.
That whole Manhattan real estate thing, you know?
Yeah. All right.
Later, my collaborator, Nick Chavin, learned from Durst's second victim, Susan Berman, that it was she, Susan Berman, who placed the phone call to the dean of the medical college.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And she did that to give Durst an alibi.
Okay, and you say second victim, so this woman eventually disappears as well?
This woman, Susan Berman, Berman, and again, Susan Berman, Bob Durst, and Nick Chavin were intimate friends, very, very close friends. In fact, Susan Berman even had a sexual relationship with my collaborator, Nick Chavin. And she became Durst's second victim when the authorities were reinvestigating Durst's wife's disappearance and had contacted Susan Berman and had made an arrangement to interview her. When Durst found out that Susan Berman was going to be interviewed by the authorities, he feared that she would possibly inform on whatever she knew about the disappearance of his wife, and he decided to kill her.
Wow, this is like a bad episode of The Apprentice.
Pretty much.
You're fired.
Exactly.
You're fired.
Right. More like the extreme version.
Yeah, this would be the extreme version.
Right. You're gone.
Wow. Now, as a side note, Susan Berman, her father was a gangster. As a matter of fact, her father was one of the orchestrator of Bugsy Siegel's assassination.
Oh.
In fact, the day after Bugsy Siegel had been assassinated, Susan Berman's father walked into the Flamingo Hotel and Casino and took over the operation on behalf of Meyer Lansky.
United States Senator Richard Blumenthal. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you. Thanks for having me.
Wow, you're always welcome here. You know that.
Thank you.
M&T Bank. It was People's Bank, and then People's merged with M&T, and then there were all kinds of problems.
All kinds of problems in the conversion, which we warned might happen. Remember when the announcement was made, I was concerned that M&T Bank, which is based in Buffalo, would be in effect unresponsive to local concerns here in Connecticut.
Right.
Well, as it turns out, this conversion was utter chaos for too many consumers and businesses because they lost access to their bank accounts and endured long wait times only to see no resolution. They saw delays in payments. And I want M&T Bank to cover any of the costs for those consumers.
Wow.
That may have been incurred. And cool. I've asked for an investigation by the two federal agencies that have authority.
Awesome. It was a huge
That is
cluster.
The worst for someone in Buffalo. I was like,
yep.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, crap.
All right, so people were affected with the mobile apps and stuff, and businesses affected because they couldn't access money. They can't get, expenditures and reports and whatnot. Is this a screw-up? It's just a screw-up, right? It's just they didn't do it.
It is a screw-up.
Yeah. Okay, good.
That's
official.
Not a legal term, but
it is now
a screw-up. And remember, this is not a business or, you know, one of us asking for a loan from the bank or some other service, which might be delayed. It's their money, our money.
Right.
And the bank deprived them of access to it. It's not like we were asking them to do something special. It's money that had to be accessed to pay a bill or buy groceries or pay for kids' clothing. You know, people couldn't access their own money.
My name is $29.
Yeah, it's one thing if you're merging a convenience store or an oil company, but it's another whole deal if you're, you know, in control of tons of money.
Everyone's like savings.
Money you can weigh.
Yes.
Webster Bank.
And here we are.
Merged,
you know,
and I'm a customer. I had no idea.
Oh.
Like, there was no difference in service.
Really? The
service was never interrupted. Nothing.
Oh,
it was
that's beautiful.
Seamless.
Oh, okay. Figures I got the bad one.
Well, there are a lot of people this long after Labor Day that still don't have full access, and that's why I want information in real time. My office is continuing to receive complaints. I want the bank to be providing better information. And the Federal Reserve and Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, those two federal agencies have a responsibility. But, you know, I'm going to be going to some of my colleagues because M&T Bank has potential customers in other states that might be affected.
Wow.
And I think we need to get together some of my colleagues if they're interested in pursuing this issue.
This is turning out to be their worst nightmare. So since you and the Attorney General have announced all these things, have they straightened it out, or they're still? You're saying that there's still problems, still big problems, or for the most part cleared up?
The problems are diminishing, but between us, the Attorney General and my office, received somewhere between 50 and 100 complaints just over the weekend and in recent days.
If anyone's listening who has problems, do you want them to reach out to your office?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, to my office or to the Attorney General's office. He's done an excellent job here. He's on top of it. And, of course, he has the ability to bring a lawsuit, as I well know from my days in that job.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't have that. I don't have that authority now, but we want to get that information because we'll make it available to the federal authorities. And I'm really hoping that M&T will do the right thing and do it more quickly here. You know, it's a bank that's new to Connecticut. You only get one chance to make a first impression.
This is true. What a bad impression that was.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like the interview that AJ had with management 20 years ago. When,
exactly.
Yeah, not good.
I started choking right in front
of him. But somehow you got through it.
Yes.
Senator Blumenthal's on the phone. Did you watch any of the Queen's funeral?
I did.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Oh.
The funeral was just riveting. You know, I didn't expect it to be so moving, but it just recalled a lot of history. I think the event itself reminded us of the importance of dignity and respect, as well as basic civility. And, you know, what the Queen did for England, reading the stories of natural disasters and political threats.
She went through a lot.
The country together.
At a young age.
Earned her battle
scores. She kept it together the whole time.
Yep.
You ever meet her?
Yeah. I never met her. I did meet Prince Charles.
Who's now the king.
When he visited.
So you met a king.
Yeah, look at you.
What was that like? What do you guys talk about? Yeah. What do you talk about when you meet a prince?
Right.
You know, he came to the event that I attended knowing I was going to be there. At the time, I was Attorney General, and absolutely fully prepared, knowing about me. You know, he'd been briefed, he retained it, and, you know, what was I? I was the Attorney General of the state of Connecticut.
Tiny state.
I got briefed in gym class.
Important state.
Yes.
In my mind, but a tiny state.
Right.
Yeah, a very important state.
He wanted to buy it.
Not so important an individual. And, but he was just totally prepared and very, very focused on every person he met. I think that's what impressed me about him, that for the time that he was with someone, he wasn't looking over their shoulder at the next person who's going to meet. He wasn't
next.
Looking around the room to see who was important. He was with that person.
Right.
That's
undivided attention.
Did you shake his hand?
Exactly.
Of course you did.
I did.
Was it a firm grasp?
Did he have sausage fingers? Did you notice?
Right, they feel soft.
Did you see that online?
Yeah.
I can't remember that.
Right.
I don't remember that point.
But did you see that online? Saying,
yeah, I did. His hands are awful thick.
I was talking to the senator.
Right, sorry.
Did you see that online?
I didn't see it.
Okay. So you saw the important stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
A real historic moment for England at a time where it has a new prime minister and a major political challenge ahead. The war in Ukraine seems to be going in the right direction. We'll continue to pose challenges to NATO, and the UK has been our steadfast ally over decades and continues to be. So I think there'll be stability there.
We're talking to Senator Blumenthal about M&T Bank and everything he's doing there, and then the Queen funeral, and he met the now King,
which
is pretty cool. You met a ton of presidents too, right? How many presidents have you met? Sitting presidents.
Going back to, I did once meet, I've met, you know, the two Bushes and President Carter. I never met President Johnson. But, you know, I'll just leave you with this thought.
Clinton, Obama?
Yes, very much so. In fact, I was in Bill Clinton's law school class.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, law school.
What's the answer to this one?
So
Well, that's a pretty good class, whoever that professor was.
What's the answer number 12?
He was looking at the senator's paper.
What's your writing over there? What does that say? I can't read your handwriting, for God's sake.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of history.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
But, yeah.
Well, good for you. You're having a good life.
I wish the new king well. I wish him, really wish him well. And, of course, this country now faces what's happening in Puerto Rico. And I'm hoping that beginning today, I'm going to be talking to colleagues about what we can do to help the island of Puerto Rico and avoid the mistakes we made after Maria in delaying aid and then failing to focus it in the right way.
Oh, I'd love to talk to you about that if there's anything we could do on this end, because it's just horrific. You know, we went out to the Dominican Republic just a couple of weeks ago with 100 listeners. And if you're on the resort, it's one kind of existence.
Yeah.
And then you go off. Like, we, thanks to one of my friends who passed around a hat, we collected money, which was $30,000 in their money. And three of my friends drove off an hour out of the resort to deliver the money. We're seeing pictures now. That place was just devastated.
Yeah.
It was devastated when they delivered the money. They still had tarps on the roof, roofs of houses from 2017. It's tough. These people,
tough existence.
They live a tough life.
Yep.
And now it's even worse.
Yeah.
So anything we could do, sign us up.
Anything we can do, we should do. You know, I visited Puerto Rico just a very short time after Maria, and I saw the chaos there in the government's approach. Came back thinking that we needed to reorganize and focus and provide more aid and, you know, not to get too political, but unfortunately the Congress and the president couldn't get it done. And now we have another challenge and we need to do better than we did then. And FEMA has begun working, but it really needs to be an all hands, all on deck approach here with other agencies and obviously private donations, like you've just mentioned. People want to support Puerto Rico. They're fellow Americans. Remember, they're fellow Americans.
That's right.
Yep.
3.2 million people.
Sound on Sound is this weekend in Bridgeport. Senator Blumenthal, will you be attending?
I haven't finalized my plans for the weekend yet.
There you go, see?
I know this guy.
Right.
It's a two-day concert, Seaside Park.
Yep.
Stevie Nicks is headlining Saturday night, and then Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds on Sunday night. I think you'll love it. Seaside Park is beautiful.
Yep.
Sounds great.
Just a lot of great music.
It is beautiful.
And you could wear your suit there, and you'll fit right in.
And I will go anywhere to meet people and say hi. So
you're going to meet the most people there. And Jimmy Complic, and you know Howard's a fan, right? The CEO of
I know them both.
Yeah.
They've done a great job.
Yes, they have.
Right. And they're coming in studio next.
But, right.
You know, they'll give you a backstage pass to give you whatever you need. We'll get you.
Maybe I'll see you there.
All right. We'll get you a Stevie Nicks t-shirt.
Nice.
Backstage pass.
You look good.
I'll go through my wardrobe, my extensive wardrobe.
Let's see. Black Sabbath.
I picture
Black
the senator. You're so buttoned up. I picture you sleeping in a suit.
Yep.
I picture you on a treadmill in a suit.
He wears a suit in the shower.
All right, Senator. Always good to hear your voice.
Not
thanks
so
for coming
much.
On.
Great to talk to you. Thanks.
Right. So
Senator Richard Blumenthal. How do you go from being a Disney star to a porn star?
Oh, interesting. How do you do that?
How do you do that?
Disney
Let's
magic?
Talk to Maitland Ward. Hi, Maitland.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So.
Nice to talk to you this morning.
Nice to talk to you.
Right.
She has a book out called Rated X, How Porn Liberated Me from Hollywood.
Oh.
So how old were you when you became a Disney star?
I was already of age, like 20 years old. So I was, I actually started off in Hollywood well when I was 16, but I was on a soap opera. So so I did start out young, but I was a very young Disney type, princess type, I guess.
You were Rachel from Boy Meets World.
Oh.
Yes, I was Rachel.
It was a big deal.
Okay, I'm familiar with that show.
Right.
It's my favorite show. She got to make out with Matt Lawrence, Will Friedle.
Oh.
People I don't know.
Right.
The two hottest actors of that series.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay, good.
The big deal. Good job.
See what you miss?
No, see, you know, Maitland, when you do this all the time, you forget what it's, you know, we look at it and say, wow, you get paid to make out with these hot guys. I don't say that, but Ashley says that.
Oh, absolutely.
She said it emphatically, too.
Yeah. So excited.
Yeah. Exactly.
But how
and now I get paid to have sex with hot guys. So, like, you know.
Well, how did, let's talk about that. So you're Disney, you're on Boy Meets World, and then, like, then what happens?
Girl met everybody.
There were many, like, even decades that happened between there. So it wasn't like it was just like a jump from Disney to porn. It was really an authentic journey of mine, I have to say, because I first of all, after I left Boy Meets World and I got some roles and stuff, I was in White Chicks and things like that. But
oh, yeah.
I felt like I was being typecast. Like, I could not get out of the box of that Disney character. Nobody would cast me like as that Disney character anymore, but they wouldn't let me go past that either.
Right. Yeah, so there's a gift and a curse
right.
with being so yeah. good at something. You were right. so good in that role, yeah. no one could see you doing something else.
Yeah, no Snow White for you anymore.
Right. She was like the hot girl next door and like the only redhead yeah. on the cast.
Yeah, and it's funny, like looking back when I was writing the book and everything, I saw what like a sexual being I was on that show. I mean, at the time, I guess I kind of realized it, but I really fully realized it when I was like looking back and writing the book and seeing like, man, I was used for a lot of like sexual jokes and innuendos, and I was like the fodder kind of.
Were you like
show.
A bimbo, like the whore next door character?
No, I wasn't a bimbo.
She picked somebody up and put them on a washing machine at some point, I think I remember.
Yeah.
What, and had sex with them?
All right, she's strong.
And had sex with them?
Lessons, I would use my sexuality and like...
It was insinuated.
I would always use my sexuality to teach you a good lesson on the show, like a good Disney lesson.
The old spin Man. Cycle, I got it.
I've become more interested in this show in 5 minutes than right? I've been in my whole life.
I had no idea.
I had a food fight where my feet were on his face with marinara sauce. So.
Oh, AJ's my God,
in.
Yes!
AJ is in.
You did.
So marinara parmesan.
Oh, my God. Did your feet go viral after that?
No, because we didn't have viral back then.
They had their own spin-off series.
Oh, wow.
Feet Meets World.
They would have now.
Right.
AJ has a foot fetish.
Have, like,
can you describe your feet to him?
I have amazing feet. Actually, people that have foot fetishes love my feet because I have a super high arch.
Oh, gotcha.
Like, super high arch.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So she stands taller.
Yeah, because a flat arch would be... Like duck feet.
I guess, right. You hear a lot of, you hear a lot of slappy sounds, right.
Yeah.
Right. She couldn't sneak up on you anytime soon, right.
How are your toes? Are they long and slender, or are they short and stubby?
No,
sounds like Ashley's more involved.
They're kind of shorter, but they're not short. Like,
so you can't use chopsticks then, right?
My feet are very cute and compact.
Right.
Okay, that's important. We're going to move on from your feet in a second. But since
yeah,
we're
my
here.
Feet, man, I didn't know I'd be describing my feet this morning.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. Okay, so I just Googled Maitland Ward's feet, and wow, all your porn pictures come up.
Oops.
Yeah, nothing from Boy Meets World, nothing about some kind of food fight with feet.
Right.
Yeah, there's, wow, you've done a lot of things with your feet. Okay,
right.
So.
I've done a lot.
Knitting.
Yeah.
Well, now I have to look.
Right.
I don't think you should.
Right.
I don't think your Disney eyes should cast upon
pulling
these
olives out of a jar.
Images.
Yeah.
All right. So you leave Boy Meets World. There's years and years. No one really wants to put you in anything because they just see as Boy Meets World girl. And you think, well, I'm going to blow this bubble up.
Right. Literally.
Well. I have to say, though, I took time away from Hollywood. I moved to New York for a while. I got married. I said, you know, I kind of want to discover myself and who I am as a person and a performer. And so I started, actually, when I was in New York, I started erotic writing, and I started doing things that, you know, just maybe I would be scared to do if I was still in Hollywood and that Hollywood bubble. But so I really just started discovering, like, my sexuality and, like, you know, just who I wanted to be.
What
and
does that mean?
Very...
So you discovered your sexuality. Does that mean, like, you just, like, you enjoyed having sex?
Yeah, look, I like sex, yeah.
That too, and also like I discovered like, well, I didn't discover it, but I came to, I guess I came to like, you know, to terms with the fact that I like girls and I like I'm more adventurous than I wanted to admit in the past. I wanted to be a very good girl in the past. I wanted to definitely walk the straight and narrow because everybody in Hollywood in my life was always like, you need to do this. You need to walk this path. You can't be, you can't step out of line.
You had a whole life of following directions. Directors telling you what to do, agents, managers.
Yes.
Right. And then you're like, I don't have to do any of that. I can do my own thing. I want.
Right. Right. So I really stepped out of that and I started to discover like what I liked as a person, like for myself. And it wasn't until, actually, I came back to L.A. when around the time that Girl Meets World, the spinoff of Boy Meets World was coming around. And it was like, oh, my gosh, I'm back to Boy Meets World and all that stuff. But I decided for my social media and everything, I was just going to, you know, do what I wanted to do. I wasn't going to follow directions anymore. I wasn't going to listen to Disney and telling me, you know, you have to do this or you have to do that. I'm like, I'm going to do my own thing. And so I started posting, like, you know, I do a lot of cosplay. So I did, sexy cosplay photos and bikini photos.
Just explain the cosplay to those who don't know what that means.
Oh yeah, cosplay. Basically, it's just costume play, basically, for, like I did Star Wars, like Slave Leia bikini.
Not to be confused with furries.
Right.
Yeah, those are different.
It's like clowns and mimes.
Exactly right.
Not the same thing. Right. One similar, close. But different.
Yeah. One
it's
has
like
a horn.
A costume, but half of it's missing.
Well, that's true.
The important parts.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I did the sexier costume. So, yes, exactly. But my fans really responded, and I started getting a whole new audience and stuff. So, and I started discovering that I really liked the sexier photos and stuff, but then I was getting kicked off of Instagram and stuff because you can't do sexy photos without people complaining and them taking you off. Even though it wasn't anything, I wasn't showing anything.
It's going to be the demise of Instagram. It's forcing everyone somewhere else.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I started creating content, which I didn't even know what that was at first. But my fans were like, you know, do it. We'll buy your pictures and stuff. And I was like, oh, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I can get, like, some extra money for just to do photo shoots and stuff. So I started a Patreon page, which is, you know, where people pledge to be your patrons from anywhere from, like, $15 to $300 a month. And one night I was like, oh, I'll just do it. But then I didn't even announce it or anything. And then I had... The next morning, 20 people had subscribed, and I was like, "Wait a minute, By the end of the week, it was like 2,800 people were subscribed to me, and I was like, "This is a whole new world," and that's where it just snowballed because I started.
Girl meets money.
Yep.
Let myself go.
girl meets bank.
It was amazing, but honestly, it allowed me to really take control of my business and my life and like my
good for you.
Content. And so that's where it snowballed. And I did all my original like porn stuff along the way there. I would do girl stuff. I would do like, I just like, you know,
are you still into guys or strictly girls now?
No. I do guys. I do. Yeah. It started off girls. And then I like eventually after a long talk with my husband, actually, which I talk about in the book, I started doing guys, but I had two guys that were professional porn stars who had been in the business for like 10 years.
It's a good husband. Huh? I mean, I don't know good, but like he's able to, you know.
Must be a lot of money.
Must be a lot of money.
That's so tough.
Let's be realistic.
Yeah, what's he driving?
No, he was very supportive because he knew that I was like, I loved what I was doing. I loved performing, and I loved, you know, what I was doing for my content. And then that all eventually led to the professional porn career.
No, but it's the money.
It was a long time coming.
Yeah.
That Maitland Ward is on. It's the money, though, because if you weren't making money, you could say, I love having sex on film. It's like, think so.
I like you in community theater.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's
the money.
Yeah.
If there's zero money, you're not having this conversation with him.
All she wore are the ruby slippers.
Well, that's... I was doing all my erotic writing and all that kind of exploration of myself for nothing back in the day.
Yeah,
and
but you weren't doing it with men on film.
Right. Writing's one thing.
Yeah. I love your story. I think it's a movie.
I was doing my social media, all my sexy social media, for years without any money from it. I was just doing it for fun.
No, I know,
I mean,
but
I would do my cosplay.
No. First of all, I love your career. I love this book. We're linked up. People should buy it. It should be a movie. But what I'm saying is, your husband's not signing up for this if there's no money involved.
Right.
If it's just you having sex with guys on film, but no one's watching.
Yeah.
Maitland, think about this.
Well, I don't know.
I want him on.
It was something that I needed to do for myself.
Really?
It was really something I needed to do for myself, and I think my fans really responded to that.
Like, but if there's no money,
right. I wanted to do it.
But all right, well, I gotta let you go because I think you gotta do something else here. I want to have you back. There's so many more things I have to talk to you about.
There's so much to talk about.
All right, we're gonna Ashley's gonna work on that. Congratulations on all your success and taking control of your own career and destiny. Thank you.
Way to go, Maitland.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maitland Ward.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.